I would like to welcome our next speaker. This is Poul Henning Kamp, who is going to give us a talk about surveillance, too cheap to meter. Please give Poul Henning a big hand.
So how many here do not understand Danish? Okay, we'll do it in English. Some of the illustrations will be in Danish, but I'll explain what the show. So many years ago, we had a lot of fun about this t-shirt. And since then, we realized that this may actually be correct. And we talked a lot about the political layer, but this year I want to look at the financial layer, because we generally tend to ignore that. And I think it's incredibly important for the surveillance situation. So I'm going to rewind very, very far back. In 1954, the chairman for the US Atomic Energy Commission gives a speech for the National Association of Science Writers. And one of the things he says is that we will probably soon have electrical energy too cheap to meter. That has become a problem for the atomic energy business ever since. People have been rubbing their nose in this statement. This is from the US Nuclear Regulation Agency. They have a frequently asked question to try to explain this thing. But he actually has a very precise and very good point. This is a cut from the Danish newspaper, The Engineer, from 1959, containing statistics about the Danish grid in 1958-59. They're seeing growth of 7% per year, but only a doubling over the last 10 years, though. But if you take those numbers and you look out and say, what will a normal house use of electricity in 2020, you get a number between 45 megawatt hours and 2.6 megawatt hours. The reality is only 1.5. But if you were in the business of producing and selling electricity at that point, this scared the shit out of you. They looked at growth curves like this. This is a semi-log scale. The y-axis is logarithmic. This is like, you know, COVID-19, exponential functions. They also knew that the oil reserves were finite. There might be oil we haven't found yet, but at some point we'll have used all the oil. And if you look at a finite resource and exponential growth, it runs out really fast. So at this point, the only technology available to them that would be able to follow that curve however far it would go would be nuclear power. It was the only energy that had sufficient density that we wouldn't have to put down a coal-fired plant in every town throughout the West. So it was more or less totally assumed, given beyond dispute, that we will be building nuclear power plants because it's the only way to continue the curve. This is a big spread from same engineer's newspaper from 1966, where they say that they're starting to save up the money now to build the first plant in 1975. And it's not if they will, it's when they will, with an option of building it a little bit earlier, maybe. There's some problems we need to deal with, but there's absolutely no public debate at this point. Nuclear power is going to happen, and that's going to happen, and that's just going to happen. There's no choice. But nuclear power has a big problem. You can't regulate it. The curve you have on your left side here is the Danish electricity use over a day in December in 1961. And we have a very big peak in the morning and in the afternoon, and then during lunch everybody cools down or something. At this point, moving major users of electricity was unthinkable. We're back in the 1960s. Everybody go on summer vacation in the same 3 weeks. The problem is, you can't regulate a nuclear reactor. It's physics. It's not something you get to debate. The top curve shows the regulatory domain in Belgium today. You can regulate a nuclear reactor 25% down for less than 6 hours, but then it has to run continuously for 3 days at full power again before you're allowed to regulate it down again. And this is simply a matter of neutronics in the kernel. The fundamental problem is that a nuclear reactor is a cylindrical device. You have fuel rods going vertically down through it, but the nuclear reaction is a spherical phenomenon. And the more power you have, you generate, the larger the sphere. And that means if you, when you cut it, when you reduce the power production, you reduce the radius of the square in the middle where you have sufficient neutronic density. And it gives all sorts of problems, both in terms of fusion results that eat neutrons, but also in terms of burning up spent fuel and so on. The bottom one, I'm not going to try to explain it, but it's basically regulating a nuclear reactor is like sailing a supertanker in a very narrow strait, or maybe I should say container ship in Suez Canal. You really don't want to try to wiggle around. The small gray area here at the top is the normal frequency control area. That's where you can run your nuclear reactor without any questions under normal circumstances. So the question is, what do we do about all this electricity? We'll have the nuclear reactors running up here, and then we'll have a couple of peak plants we'll use for the peaks. But then we have all this electricity. What are we going to do with it? I mean, we can stop the turbine and just have the heat go out into the air, into the water, whatever. We might as well let the turbine run. That's actually better for it, running constantly also. So we have all this electricity. Right? So we have a situation, an economic outlook, where we will have power production that way overshoots the average demand. Too cheap to meter comes in because power meters are actually expensive. You have to buy them. You have to install them. You have to read them. You have to do the bookkeeping. You have to handle the people who don't pay their bills. You have to do statistical tests that they're still precise. You have to calibrate them and so on. It's actually a big business. This is what bookkeeping looked like in the 1960s when we were looking at this. Remember, this is computers are starting to get into it. But it's very attractive to think things like, maybe if we remove the variable element of people's electrical bill, we don't have to do, we'll have 4 different kinds of electricity bills. If you have one phase, if you have 3 phases, if you have a big fuse, if you have an even bigger fuse, right? We can have them pre-printed, we just need to stamp the name and address and send them out. It's much simpler. We don't have to have people go out and read the meters. We don't need to care about the calibration because there's no meter. Right? You'll be limited by the fuse, the top fuse going into your house. End of story. So the place where this comes from is that we'll have these enormous fixed costs, and the variable cost will be marginal. So there's no point in spending money metering the variable part. Transpires, things didn't go that bad. The curve kind of leveled off, and we got taught an idea about oil back in 1973, and we've never forgotten that again. We never made ourselves dependent on fossil fuels from unstable regimes ever since. Not a problem, solved. And the idea that we could ditch the electricity meter was not something he was alone about. This is a editorial from the same paper again. Throw out these just waste of money and administrative overhead. Right. This was literally how the electricity business thought at this time. So back to the future. So today the major fight on the internet is for lower latency. The first thing that happens whenever you go anywhere with a mobile phone is a DNS lookup. And since DNS is very useful for tracking people, all the DNS records have very low TTLs. They're not cacheable for very long. In the ultimate case, you have one big company that basically has no TTL on the DNS records. And then they fuck up the DNS server so nobody can reach them. And it transpires their own systems cannot reach the DNS server either. And since they have everything probably done on computers, they end up having to drive three high-level managers down to a data center in the South Bay so that one of them can say to the guard, which is his responsibility, that the next one is okay, and the next one can say the third one is okay, and he can say this guy is allowed to go in and muck with that router. And I'm told it was not going any faster because somebody called, I don't know, Mark or something, kept calling everybody on the phone and yelling at them something about owning the company and stuff. But nobody knew the phone number, so, and I mean, anybody can say that, right? But they have larger TTLs now, by the way. The primary argument for HTTP2 is to reuse the TCP connection we already have open, so that we don't have to have the three-way handshake before we get the first content. The primary argument for HTTP3 is we'll have a persistent session so that even if our mobile phone moves somewhere else, get a new IP number, we can get the first request with a single packet to reduce the latency. It's all about getting the latency down. So why is that priority number one? Because when you go into any well-monetized website, it throws around 50 to 100 HTTP requests out. Targeted advertising, the actual content may come at some point, third-party content, social media tie-ins, analytics, engagement, all this crap. This is an example of it. Some of it is in red because I run no script on my browser, so they don't get to start the entire cascade. Targeted advertising is a major part of this, because to do targeted advertising, you have to ask who wants to advertise here. When you go into websites, there's an online, real-time auction going on about your attention. It's run by Google and Facebook, but below them is an ecosystem of a couple of hundred brokers who will bid in these real-time very rapid auctions and say, oh, I have an advertisement, I want to show this user, and so on. Some of these brokers never win to show any advertising, which is a kind of a funny thing. They're just, you know, listening in on the traffic. And this is basically why the mobile experience sucks. All the crap they have to do the advertising on top of it. But everybody blames their telco. Not entirely unfairly, I would say. But the soggy experience is mainly blamed on telcos. So telcos roll out a new network, 5G network, to improve things. And this is their number one priority. The fight for 5G, shorter response time, bigger bandwidth. But the shorter response time is a big one. The bandwidth is sort of a secondary thing, really. And it's not been a secret. 5G were ready, as far as everybody thought, until somebody came and said, we have to get these latencies down. That delayed 5G for about 3 years, the standardization process. Getting latency down, getting latency down, getting latency down. When you want a higher bandwidth, you need to use a higher radio frequency. That means you have a shorter reach. When we had the NMT, the first mobile telephone network, well, the second mobile telephone network in Denmark, we had 28 base stations for all of Denmark. That was all it took. And you were covered sailing all the way to Sweden too. Then we got GSM, which under normal circumstances is limited to 35 kilometers. You can do a trick with dual time slots, so you can double that, but then only have half as many handsets and stuff. LTE reduced it to 10 kilometers. 5G, in many instances, reduces it to 100 meters in high population areas. This also means now they know where you are equally precisely. With GSM and LTE, they knew within 100 meters, a radius of 100 meters on certainty, circular area probability. With 5G, they will know where you are within a few meters. This means they will know what ice cream shop you went into if there are two. They can tell whether you went to Burger King or McDonald's, even when they're next door. But this is purely a side effect. That's not why they built the network. But it comes out of building the network. And these data pours out of the network constantly because the network needs these informations to work. You cannot get the 5G network to move the data if it doesn't know where you are, which antennas, and so on. And historically, telcos have been data dependent. They were almost paranoid about call data records because they would have to go to court with customers who said, I never called this number, this sex line you claim I called. They'd have to drag them into court, show here's the call data record from this switch, this switch, this switch. We can show you made this telephone call. It's valuable data. It used to be valuable data. And there's this little build over where you, you know, how many people call their grandmother on Christmas Eve to say Merry Christmas. That was a very big thing in the US. And, you know, how many people went to the Justin Bieber concert or Roskilde Festival or Black Friday in City 2 and so on. But customers don't complain about phone bills anymore because they're flat rate. It transpired that the volume on traffic made teletraffic too cheap to meter. All this paperwork was too expensive. And I can semi-happily, unhappily say that I was there when it happened in Denmark, when CyberCity introduced flat rate internet access. Because it was simply cheaper for us to give people a fixed price than to do all the paperwork and print all the lines about what they had used and when they had used it. So today, telecommunications is flat rate. When people complain, it's because they've been sucked up by some cruise ship or other predatory network, which is now illegal in the EU, so that shouldn't happen anymore. So the entire go-to-court thing with the data is gone. So why don't the telcos stop? Well, they need to change the equipment to stop it, right? They can't change it from the operational network. It will pour out of the operational network, whatever happens. But they could stop collecting it, couldn't they? Yes, except there may be a court order on some of it. So they still have to record that. And they may be doing technical experiments of their own to find out where to put up new base stations. So they also have to keep that data. And there's probably more special cases than that that I don't know about. And then there's politics. But we're at layer 8, we're not doing the politics, so we'll skip that one today. And recently there was a bit of news about the New Day, which is basically TDC, or the incumbent telco in Denmark. They're going to spend a billion kroner on a new back office system. They had the same news about 10 years ago. They gave it up back then. This is expensive stuff. They will have to pay money to stop the collection of the data. Nobody pays them to say, stop, please stop monitoring everybody in Denmark. There would be money out of the telco's pocket to stop it. It's cheaper for them to continue because they have it in place. It's running. I seem to have moved the slide around now. Oh yeah, no, that's the second part. The other part of the 5G network is the communication with big numbers of Internet of Things units. This is also a big one. So we're seeing more and more consumer items getting over the air upgrades. There was a interesting case recently where the AEG did a software update on an internet-connected microwave oven and gave it the wrong file. So it thought it was a steam oven. And the steam oven, or the microwave oven, doesn't have the keys you use on the steam oven to get into the software updates menu. So they have to send a technician out and do the and turn it back. But we're seeing increasingly that there is a built-in SIM card. There is a built-in internet connection to download over-the-air updates without the consumer being involved. The vendor gets a volume agreement with a telco. We need a hell of a lot of SIM cards. They will be in one place. They will never move. Well, maybe once or twice in 10 years. But they're not going to run around. They're never going to run to big events. They're not going to bother you. There will normally be no traffic on them. And we can schedule burst traffic. When we do a software update, we can call you and say, when is a good time for you? So the telco can give very good rates on this. You would be amazed how cheaply you can get a SIM card when you call up with conditions like this. My lawnmower robots come with a SIM card. I've never paid a thing for it. Because volume. High-end cars, high-end white goods, built-in SIM cards these days. The legal business case for this, or the moral business case for this, is that you won't have any trouble with customers who cannot figure out to attach their dishwasher to their Wi-Fi. You also won't have troubles with the ones who don't want to attach it to their Wi-Fi. You can tell very precisely when the warranty period starts. You can tell exactly when it was used first time. You can know if it has been misused, if it's been overloaded, if it was not installed level, if it was not all these things, if it was outside temperature limits, lower voltage, higher voltage, all these things, you know that now. So you can reduce fraud from almost nothing to nothing, right? Whether that's a good investment of money, well, that's the interesting thing, right? You also get telemetry for optimizing your product so that the next model will last exactly the warranty period plus 2 weeks. That's legal. The shady business case is that once you have the new model on the market, you can handicap the old one. Nobody would ever do that with a mobile phone, I'm sure. Right. I have credible information that something happens to high-end cars of certain brand when the new model is out. From somebody who's pretty upset about something happening to his car. whether that's legal is a very good question. You can also brick the product if somebody attempts to do third-party unauthorized service on it. Or tries to drive the tractor from Ukraine to Russia. And then there's the outside business case. The data you collected, whether they're GDPR or not, we can discuss that, unauthorized access. I will argue that certainly GDPR data, but most data should be, we should think about it as helium. Whenever you have some physics experiment that needs to be vacuum tight, you try with helium because helium will get through anywhere. It's a very tiny atom. It's not electrical charged. If there's any kind of hole, it will leak. And it seems that personal data is the same kind of thing. Nobody seems to be able to keep a lid on them. They leak out one way or another. We have police officers looking up potential girlfriends still after I think 4 or 5 of them have been fined for it, it still happens. It's just impossible to keep it tight. And that means if you're a vendor of something and you collected all this information, if there's any way to exploit it, it probably will be. If nothing else, when your company gets ransomware, we'll brick all your customers' dishwashers Christmas morning if you don't pay us, right? And then we have the downright trivial with baby monitors being connected to pedophile networks, because apparently a lot of scantily clad women appear on baby monitor cameras. Who saw that one coming? But the general problem is all this surveillance is too cheap to meter now. The benefits of putting a SIM card in your high-end product so that whenever some rich bastard calls and complains the window wiper doesn't work on his car, you can do something about it remotely, outweighs the disadvantages of all the shit data you collect on the cars as a result of it. The telcos probably don't want to be in the surveillance business, but it would be more expensive for them not to be. But we're seeing this go into more and more products. Televisions with cameras, so they can sell audience data back to advertising networks. How many people watched this ad? How many people watched this show? This is not a problem we can solve technically. I know some people are very enthusiastic about slapping encryption on everywhere, but this is not going to do shit for it. Problems at layer N can only be solved at layer N plus one and higher. That's why we have all those fucking layers to begin with. So these problems are something that will have to be solved politically. We cannot solve them economically. They are economic problems. They have to be solved politically. What we'll probably see is that you can get high-end models and you can pay a surcharge for privacy. Privacy has always been a luxury good. The way you avoid having your credit card transactions tracked is you don't have a credit card. You have people to have credit cards for you. Right. When some crazy expensive yacht lands in a harbor, it is not some Russian rich asshole who goes down to show his passport. It's the first mate who comes down with a bunch of passports, shows them to customs, and then clears everybody on the ship. Customs don't go aboard the ship to see if those are the people on the ship. They just see a pile of passports, stamp them, and everything's okay. Privacy is a money thing. And I think we'll see that. I think we'll see that you can buy your new sports car, and then do you want the privacy option, or do you want the real-time service option? We can probably also get to cases where you buy a new television and then you'll either have to sign up for all the advertising and log in and make the account in the network and all that crap, or you'll have to buy a subscription so you don't have to. Or you'll have to do like people like us, spend the time and money to lobotomize the surveillance to get rid of it. If we look at the possible political solutions, one would simply be to tax transmission of surveillance data. Tax telemetry. We can tax everything else, so we could also tax telemetry. So that it becomes a more balanced business case. So it's not for free. So that maybe you should meter it because you'll be paying tax on it. We could tax person data. I think that's a very good idea. Have an exponential scale that says if you have data about 10 people because you have an association of whatever, you pay 1 krone a year. If you have 100 people, you pay 100 krone a year. If 1,000 people, you pay 10,000 krone a year. Let it go up with the square of the number of persons involved. to make people think about there being a cost to collecting all these data in the same place. The same way where there's a cost of collecting dangerous chemicals or explosives or anything else in big piles, right? Or we could ban things. A lot of things are banned. A lot of things could be banned. We could simply ban collecting any data that can be used for tracking purposes. Unless there is an approved application with the Ministry of Privacy or whatever. There's many ways that could be structured. But there are political things that could be done to turn this economic situation around. And they will have to be done if we want to turn it around. As long as this is purely an economic issue for the people in layer 8, surveillance is too cheap to meet it. Of course, the problem is that the politically possible solutions, that's basically an empty sheet. Nobody at the political layer are willing to even talk about this at this point. There are things coming out of EU, but they're not addressing the economics of the situation. They're addressing it on the, should we say, ideal level of privacy, but never looked into saying whether the economics of the situation should actually be addressed. That's a way we as nerds are not used to think. And it was a bit of an eye-opener for me when I started to think about it in these terms. So I hope I've shared my problem with you so it's not just my worry anymore.
Thanks.
Questions? If there are any.
Any questions?
You won't have to pay for them.
No, no questions.
Really?
Then, really?
Oh, that was a couple.
No questions? Oh, that was a question. Good.
So you mentioned data retention basically earlier. So the system of billing on SIM cards on mobile phone data, and the fact that up until now we've basically been keeping track of the calls, of the use of data, etc., and that because of flat rates, that's no longer necessary. How does this, if I remember correctly, there was a ruling by the European Court of Justice precisely on the question of retention of telephone records, saying that telephone companies were only allowed to retain them for the purposes of billing. So what does that say now? Should it really be the case today that the Danish telecoms operators are still retaining that information if it's no longer necessary for billing? That's kind of my question. But maybe I missed it, so.
So that's basically a political question, right? And I've skipped that in this talk. But basically, there's an economic thing about making criminal investigations cheaper also. Right? If you can just look up where the potential criminals were, that's a lot cheaper in police work. So there's a political pressure also on some of this surveillance. But so far, we have not had the Danish parliament try to get data from dishwasher manufacturers yet. Right? There are legitimate reasons. We want a criminal justice system to be able to work. And there's some checks and balances that need to work. And that's a political struggle to get that right. But without that, there's no doubt that the EU justices basically said you have to leave your data once you've done the statistics. I mean, the telco still has a right to do, say, how much traffic do we have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and so on. At a statistical level, but tracking at the individual level, no. That's clearly out with that one. But in that case, the politics have trumped it on interesting and pretty rocky ground in Denmark. But that's a battle on the layer one level up, right?
It's a little bit difficult to come with questions after such an excellent talk, so I think that's why the audience is a little bit silent. And I'm going to start with some stupid questions. A lot of the surveillance that you're talking about is at the individual level, but a lot of the data that the Internet of Things and the companies will say that they're looking for is on the non-personal level. when we're looking at the proposals on, for example, a data act and sort of sharing data also across companies and countries within the EU, having these data lakes, how do we, at the political level, make sure that we protect against having surveillance built into our washing machines and our cars and our phones, while at the same time making sure that we can have the best use of them possible?
Tax the shit out of it. No, I mean it literally. Taxing can be used to raise revenue, and it can be used to regulate behavior. And tax SIM cards with no other purpose than spying on people and things. Why shouldn't it cost, I don't know, 100 euros a year? I mean, the numbers are for discussion and calculations and spreadsheets and so on. But there's been a total unwillingness to tax anything related to the internet so far because, oh, we shouldn't stop the next Bill Gates, right? I happen to disagree on that one. But it's time for the politicians to realize that this is now not something adjunct to society. This is an integral part of society. And it needs to work with and in society. And it needs to be regulated to work in society. And I think, I don't understand why collections of personal identifiable information is not taxed at this point. Simply as a way to reduce the accumulation of it in larger and larger piles. And the fact that it would bankrupt Google and Facebook, I don't see that as a negative. Yeah. There's a question behind you.
Hey, I wanted to mention the Datenbrief, the data letter. That's kind of an idea from the Chaos Computer Club that's been around for a while, and that was essentially to make a law that requires every company to send each and every person that they've got data on a letter once a year detailing what exactly they have on them. And if they don't have a physical address, they have to use some, like, whatever means of contact they have. But essentially the idea was similar to your taxation idea, that increases the cost and in this case also the awareness of the users or the people that whose personal data is stored. Yeah, it increases the costs for the companies, I mean. Yeah, and that of course, well, yeah, I don't know that much about it, but I wanted to mention it.
Yeah, there's certainly an argument about making it more obvious for people how much they're being spied on. On the other hand, I don't think postal services are good as tax collectors. It would basically be a stamp tax, right? Postage stamp tax. Anything that will shift the balance in the right direction is fine with me. But I think I would prefer to use it to raise revenue that could then be used beneficially, rather than just to boost up the postal companies of the different countries.
I know very little about politics and how to implement laws and taxation, so could you talk a little bit about how it would be implemented practically? Would it require some technical solutions, or is it basically just asking every company to report how much data they've been collecting, of which kind?
I can imagine many ways of doing it, but I would prefer to leave it to people who are good at writing that kind of stuff, how to implement it. I mean, companies are supposed to report a lot of stuff these days, and that seems to work mostly. So I think having them reported under penalty of, you know, we're going to nationalize your company if you lie. That is ultimately what happens in, I mean, if you lie about the yearly accounts or whatever, basically the company can be dissolved. That's pretty much the law of any land. If it's bad enough, they can dissolve the company, right? And I think it should just be handled the same way. And similarly, if you have a company that's permitted to use, you know, dangerous chemicals, and an inspection shows that you have not lived up to the conditions of that, your company will be shut down, right? So, I mean, this is perfectly normal regulatory business, I think. It's cyber, so we shouldn't touch it because, you know, we need to get the politicians over that hump and tell them to actually get on with their job.
Thank you for the very nice talk. Very depressing talk. I just wanted to add one thing, which was you said many cars or expensive cars have this, and in fact, it's all cars sold in the European Union after April of 2018 are required to have cellular connectivity now.
For the emergency thing. They're not required to use it for telemetry, but
no,
since they paid to install it.
So I think if they have it, then it's usually it's going to associate with every tower. It's online all the time in practice.
Yes, any more questions? Nope. Good, we got it opened up a bit. Yeah, well, thank you very much, Paul Henning.
You're welcome.
An excellent and interesting talk.
Thanks.